welcome. Each of you are here during what is known as the practice period, Pentagon community. It's a 27-day period during which people take on the choiceful effort of fine-tuning their intentions. Their intentions to deal with, negotiate, confront an array of matters in their life. Part of the form, which there's many things that are part of that, and part of the form is to actually commit by way of a written document that says, these are the things that I choose to address in my life. And I mean, the intentions, as you call them, the perfect intentions, are formulated from the classic six Buddhist paramitas. And so, this evening, and through the next few weeks, I'll be talking about the paramitas. Talk just about this slightly foreign word for most of us, paramitas, with what it translates as roughly is the other shore. And so it's just kind of straightforward. It's the other shore. The inference is that to cross over to the other shore from the place of unending suffering, traditionally known as samsara, into the land of awakened meaning, is itself perfection. And so the paramitas are often called also the perfections, both because to execute them is perfection itself, and also because the act of participating, of taking on the paramitas, is to bring about a kind of perfection, at least as perfect as we can get in the human form, which is pretty good, I think. So the six paramitas are the paramitas of generosity, very first one. And its Sanskrit name is dana paramita. And it's as it sounds, it's the transcendental virtue of giving. It's not ordinary giving, it's transcendental giving. It's the giving that moves us closer to our own awakening. So it's not just the giving that is temporarily relieving suffering. To practice dana paramita means to find a way to give of yourself so completely that you are, in every gesture, seeking to eliminate suffering for eternity with each individual move, with each act that you perform. It's really important to understand that these virtues are not, you say them, you kind of rattle them off. There's giving, and there's ethics, and there's effort, and there's patience, and there's meditation, and there's wisdom. And those are all words that mean something to us in the English language. Well, I think at this point, even wisdom has become fairly mundane in our language. If we go back to the root language and words, we would understand that each of these concepts are imbued with a greatness, and they call forth our greatness. they call forth our greatness to be bodhisattvas, to be awakened beings that practice the fundamental act of compassion by holding off their own awakening because they so want to be available to support the awakening of others. This is the classic ideal of the great, what is called the great vehicle, the Mahayana vehicle of Buddhism. Should we have everyone hang out so we could just talk about Buddhism? Because really what we're here for at the end of the day is to figure out our lives. We want to figure out our own lives and how do we show up in the best way that we can. How do we have a set of principles and ideals that give us a firm contagion for understanding approaching our lives? And when we begin to think of it that way, the paramitas are not just something crafted somewhere in the last 2,500 years, or some people say 3,000, some people say the Buddha borrowed it from previous forms of practice and tradition. When we think of the paramitas, when we think of our perfect intention, we bring them fast forward right into 2007, where they can be meaningful, where they can actually be of value to us in our lives, and the way in which we touch everyone that we are in connection with. So we begin with this plan for awakening living. Now you all know already, I don't tend to use the word enlightenment. Just because our own translation of the word that is often transliterated to enlightenment carries with it a kind of baggage of something glowing, right? And as you start to think of someone that's glowing and you're entering some kind of glowing state, we slowly start to get very small and see ourselves disappearing from that possibility. And unless you're willing to, you know, basically put everything away and do nothing but that. But here we are, these ordinary beings, wanting to live extraordinary lives of service. And when we think of it that way, what we most need to do is wake up from the slumber that plagues many of us on a day-to-day basis, that keeps us from living that extraordinary life. The slumber that is a moment-to-moment challenge for us. So I like to use the word awaken, so we connect in a very real way with something that we do in the mundane way every day. Every day we wake up. Every day we are in a slumber. We are foggy, fitful, desirous, grasping, confused. Tickled, interested, disinterested, completely cut off, and then we wake up and we're in our beds. And it's just like that. The world comes into view and we immediately recognize the fuzziness of our previous state, right? So we're in this sleep, this dream-like world, and the moment that wakefulness comes to us, the fog starts to clear, and we become connected with the understanding, oh, I'm asleep. And all kinds of things that seemed muddy and foggy become clear for us. At the very least, the muddiness and fogginess that they existed becomes clear. Oh, I was asleep. And so the fact that my mother was in this place with my boyfriend, and we couldn't figure out why we were on a boat and why that boat didn't actually sit on water and become clear. But in our dream state, we are just kind of dealing with it in this bodies. And we take it for granted in some way in that dream state, in that confusion, that that's the way it is, and this is kind of confusing, but okay. And we stumble around in that dream state until we wake up and we look back and we go, oh, I was asleep. And to be awake is just that way. In the extraordinary notion of being awake. It's just that way. Many of the ways in which we are currently moving through our life, when we bring to bear on our lives a clear set of actions, a clear set of principles, of virtues, when we practice them, they illuminate that sleeping state. They illuminate that confusion, clear it up, clarify. And many things that we do, many ways in which we have engaged, just normal things, it becomes clear to us, oh, I was asleep. That was confusion. And we have an opportunity before us to change. So we begin with the practice of generosity. And in the practice of generosity, what we begin to do is to begin to give away our ego. We begin to stop filling up the basket of the mind's confusion and fixation on a self that is somehow more important than basically everything else. When we practice deep generosity, transcendental giving, we begin to let go of this solid idea of a me that owns something and a you that needs to be given. We eliminate the separation between the me and the you when we have transcendental giving. When we have ordinary giving, there's someone in need, and we have something, and we give it to them. In transcendental giving, there's just what is called for. There's just what arises, and there's no giver, and there's no recipient, and there isn't even a gift. There's just what it's called for, and the whole separation falls away. And it goes on for the remaining paramitas in that way. Are we understanding the difference between ordinary giving and transcendental giving? So with ordinary giving, you get to do the giving. In transcendental giving, you don't. It's as simple as that. The giving still happens, but there's no separation in that act. There's not, oh, that guy needs something from me, and so I'm going to give it to him, and doesn't that make me great? It falls away. The quarter or dollar leaves your hand, and simply is passed on, and there's no residue of reaction left behind. You just keep moving in your life without a fixation on the you that gave, or even a fixation on the he that, the him that needed something, or I should have given a dollar. I probably should have given five. Actually, I needed that dollar to get it. I should have given it to him. It all dissipates. It all dissolves into just what was called for. Contemplative living. The act of giving in such a way that you give away yourself in the process. Transcendental ethics, in which there isn't a noodling over should I be good, should I be bad, how do I behave in this situation, right? Where you're kind of in a constant state of, did I do that right? How did I look? Did everyone notice me? I was so good. Did you see the way I walked in that room? It was so smooth. And I'm so good because here I am giving the bomb. That's very, very ethical. And actually, I reduced my water usage today. You can go on and on. In transcendental ethics, we are simply present to each situation as it arises, and the appropriate behavior is that is called for arises with the moment. And there is no need to get caught up in a discourse over is this the right thing or is this the wrong thing. There's no need to compare. Well, you know, I know I'm kind of rough around the edges, but time really, I mean, he's really a little brave. Right? With ordinary ethics, what we do is we get into comparing mind. We get into a state of, I'm good. Or I'm bad. I did that well. I didn't do that well. I didn't call my mother. I don't do anything in my life that's really social change for me. We have this constant barrage of information that we're using to compare our little self to some ideal, some fixed concept of what it means to be good. In transcendental ethics, your fundamental goodness simply arises. As they say, you just keep your eye on the burden, which is the moment. And in the moment, what is natural, what is good for that moment, at that time, is what arises. The only thing that inhibits that is the noise of the mind, is the fixation on a you that has to accomplish something good in life. It's the same for effort. Because if we're going to do any of this at all, for sure we have to bring effort. Myriad of times. Myriad, it sounds like effort, right? We bring our effort, and of course, in an ordinary mind, we get caught up in that too. That's the look at me, I'm doing so well. I'm a really good practitioner. I sit this many hours and minutes a day. I sit this many days a week. Okay. Take it off of my to-do list and show you what a good practitioner I am. In fact, I have a whole page full of good things that I've done that show that I really make a lot of effort, and that makes me, of course, in the ordinary mind, a slightly better person than just about everyone else. Or, on the other hand, I'm not making enough effort. I really should be doing more. There are people dying, and here we are, sitting on comfortable little red cushions in a rather lovely room, listening to some more chatter. What kind of effort is that? The transcendental effort. The continuous bringing of yourself to the situation as it is all important. Continuous bringing yourself to the situation as it is all that's possible. And if the situation calls for you to leave and be on a plane and be in Iraq, then that will be what you'll do. And if the situation calls for you to take out your oil paints and express yourself on a canvas, then that will be what you do. Without the notion of a you that needs to be doing something, that needs to be applying yourself in some kind of fixed way. You enter into the stream of transcendental effort that allows you to meet the moment and to bring yourself fully to whatever it is you do, to bring yourself fully to whatever it is you do, without kind of nagging, dragging discourse going on in the back and the sides and the front of your mind. You are free to enter into the stream of transcendental effort. When you have all of this effort brought to your understanding of the root of it is, which is the root behind the word dharma, it's a word called vitta, and vitta just meant the way it is, the way it is, not the way it kind of is, not the way it should be, not the way I wish it was, but the way it is, which became the notion of the law, and the law meaning that similar concept to the way it is, not the law as imposed by someone else, but things as they are-ness. You want to bring your full self and make yourself available to the study of that, the reflection, the contemplation of what that might mean for you. You have to have a lot of patience, because it doesn't just happen like that. As much as you'd like it to, it happens. happens like that, but it doesn't happen like that until it does. And everything else before that moment requires patience so that we can bring ourselves back to the point over and over and over again, to the point of presence, to the point of the attention that is called for from us in this very moment. So Prashanti, Paramita, it's patience. And in ordinary patience, we think of it as a kind of like dull waiting, where we get, you know, pretty okay with what's happening, like standing on the too long grocery line of Whole Foods or Berkeley Bowl once again. And kind of pacing out so that it's not really tripping us out that there are way too many people here. Ordinary patience. In transcendental patience, it is a ever present, dynamic showing up that allows us to cross over to the other shoe. Ever present, similar to effort, similar to weariness, without the noise in our head that we bring the kind of over and over again applying ourselves and being at ease at the same time. So effort applies ourselves, kshanti, patience, allows us to be at ease with whatever arises. Somewhere in the rule books it is said that just because we apply ourselves, it doesn't turn out the way we mean to. And so transcendental patience supports us in being able to be available to whatever shows up as a result of that. All of these prior emotions are incredibly difficult for us to really wrap our minds around without some kind of stabilizing force, something that enables us to allow these practices of transcendental virtues to really deepen be at a cellular level for us. Because the world is just moving really, really quickly. And who has time to transcend anything? So we find ourselves upon dhyana paramita, which is meditation. And the ordinary meditation finds us on a cushion, being a meditator, yet another feather in our cap, or a yogi, or a mantra practitioner, or any other kind of thing. Transcendental meditation, not in the TM smile, the transcendental virtue practicing meditation is the meditation that is simply what we bring ourselves to with the deep understanding that that is the foundation of all the other practices. That to allow the opportunity for spaciousness so that the front and the back and the sides begin to dissipate their noise. We bring ourselves to the practice of meditation in a deep way in order to clear that space out. Further, we don't get caught up in the idea that this meditation only happens on small round cushions. In transcendental meditation, each moment as we approach it is a meditation. The last of the paramitas, we call it right from the beginning in the Heart Sutra, Prajna Paramita, the mother of all Buddhas, is named Prajna Paramita. And Prajna Paramita refers to what we translate as wisdom. We're a very heady society, and so wisdom often is equated with an intellectual capacity. Wisdom is equated and correlated somehow in many of our minds. Someone's really smart, and they have, you know, all the answers, and they can tell us something great, and that will help us. And we kind of use it loosely. Oh, they're really wise, and what we really need is to help me figure something out. The transcendental wisdom has nothing to do with intellectual capacity at all. In fact, what transcendental wisdom has to do with is no thinking whatsoever. No thinking, no ideas, no concepts about giving. No thinking, no ideas, no concepts about ethics. No thinking about effort, about patience, or about meditation. What transcendental wisdom is to embody these virtues with no concept whatsoever. No gain. No idea about attaining anything. In fact, transcendental wisdom isn't even interested in being a bodhisattva, because transcendental wisdom understands your own improvement. Transcendental wisdom understands that you as you are is just what you need to be in that moment, and releases a fixed idea about what needs to happen. And then here we are, feeling a little concerned that we actually haven't been able to achieve each of these virtues in the way that I'm explaining. I feel a bit wonky. So how do we get to this extraordinary life from this ordinary place that we sit? Perfect intentions to begin where we are. And so we begin with the practice of very, very ordinary generosity. Very ordinary generosity. Where if we have something to give and we can offer it, we do that. And maybe we'll think about ourselves as a giver and someone else as a recipient. But that begins to fall away. And then we do really ordinary ethics, where we grapple with things and we wonder, is this the way to be? And we stumble on moments where no one has to tell us and we don't have to wonder. And we enter into a transcendental relationship with that, those ethics. Start in a place of really basic effort. We get up in the morning and we don't really feel like it, and we show up. We show up for our parents, we show up for our children, We show up for our practice. We show up for life in a very ordinary way. And in the process of applying ourselves to that effort completely, some moment arises where there is no effort. And there's just you. And there's just the moment that is present. And you've entered into transcendental. And so on through the rest of it. So the entryway into transcendental virtues is to be your ordinary self with the intention for perfection, with the intention for crossing out of the sleeping state and into wakefulness. And a very ordinary, very human, you're very right now, giving and effort and ethics and patience and meditation and even your ordinary wisdom brought to bear on as many moments as you can possibly muster, moment by moment. And somewhere in the back of your mind, you will have an experience that you'll be able to turn around and reflect on, and you will remember that for a moment you forgot yourself. That for a moment you transcended. And you take the experience of that moment and you're connected with the next one that arises, and the next one that arises. And before you know it, there'll be no moments where that's not so. Perfection. Understand it as a living and dynamic way of being. That you and only you have the capacity to encourage only the other to the other shoe. From an ordinary state to a transcendental state. By your choice, your action, your effort, and your choice. And trust that wherever you are, it's just where you need to be.
Gaze on.